Welcome to the T&D podcast brought to you by TomTom. We think you're trucking awesome. You deserve a trucking awesome app. That's why today we're excited to talk about the ultimate trucking companion, TomTom Go Navigation. With premium features designed to make every delivery a breeze, Go Navigation ensures you reach your destination efficiently and stress-free. Hello and welcome back to the Trucking Driver Podcast. I'm Doogie Rankin and I'm joined today by Team T&D's tanker expert Joe Ashton, who is on a night out in Hotel Daff XF, I believe. How are you getting on, Joe?
Very good, thanks, Doogie. How are you?
Yeah, I am not bad, thanks. I've just had an extra pile of work added because our editor of the magazine, Andy Stewart, who took over when I moved to be editor at large, has had to be signed off because he has got excruciating sciatica pain and he can barely sort of stand up. So poor old Andy, get well soon. But what it means is I'm back in the full-on editor's chair. So this morning I was doing quite a lot of admin and organising things for the next issue, which Andy would usually do. But I did it for 4 years, so I'm quite familiar with it. So that's all right. And of course, there was quite a lot of news stories and things happening around about today. So maybe a little bit more of a formal format for the podcast this one round. We're going to run through some news stories for you that have been happening and have a little chat about them. Before that, guys, can I please ask you click through the TomTom sponsor link on the podcast and have a look at the offer they've got on there right now. If you go onto there, you get 1 month free of the TomTom Go sat-nav for the trucks, and that's on your phone. Get your mates to have a look at it as well, because the sat-nav is the full-on truck system that you would find in the right up-to-date, the most modern vehicles. And yeah, so you get it free for a month. If you don't like it, just cancel it at the end of the month. And if you don't, then it's like an annual subscription for, I think, sort of about £70, I think. So go check it out. How's your week been, Joe? As we are recording this, the middle of the week. So where are you? What are you driving? What have you been up to?
Well, for me, doing me 4-on-4 shifts. I'm actually on day one today, so first day in. And I'm currently over in Ossett near Wakefield. Started off at 5 o'clock this morning. Yeah, had a couple of delays. Was due to go into Liverpool to wash the tank out. They don't open till 7 o'clock. Lad there saying that they've got a couple of issues with their wash, so I didn't end up getting washed till about 9 o'clock. So that sort of set us back, which then meant I missed me loading time at the dairy at Chester. And yeah, it's just been one of them days, just one delay. I mean, you just get knock on after knock on. So normally as a day driver, I'm sort of home every night normally, but yeah, today I'd sort of, by the time I'd finished tipping, I was on just shy of 13 hours. So I wasn't going to get back to Morecambe in my time left. So yeah, we just parked up at my unloading point and, yeah, we've got a night out in the Daff.
Yeah, so I assume that is that kind of your regular truck now?
Yeah, so I spent the first 18 months or so cab hopping in different trucks all the time. But, yeah, the last probably about 4 weeks, I've been given my own unit now. So I have been sort of drip feeding gear into it. So, yeah, I am stocked up enough to survive the night, so got plenty of food and got my bed in, so
yeah. I was going to say it's not so bad, but if you were like really, really unprepared, like if you're on an agency shift or something and you've literally just got your jacket for a pillow, then that wouldn't be so good. But if you've been able to filter your own kit into the truck, then you're sorted. And so, where did you get parked? You just parked at like the loading point.
Yeah, luckily this it's a food factory. They make sort of margarines and butters and spreads and things like that. So the factory runs 24/7, but they only tip between sort of 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. So yeah, pretty much when I took my pipe off, I packed everything away. I just left the truck on the point. So yeah, so it's nice and quiet, other than maybe the odd forklift or something on night shift sort of coming past to pick a stack of pallets up. Then yeah, nice and secure, nice and safe, 24-hour security, and just me on my toddy out in the yard. So yeah, should be a nice quiet sleep.
Yeah, oh, that's what you want. Now, I have got a tip for you guys. You podcast listeners, you exclusive band of legends. One of our other Team T&D guys, Niall Barker, has discovered, well, you might know it, you might not, but here's a little tip for a lovely little truck stop place down in Crawley in Sussex. If you happen to be down that part of the world, it's called The Cabin. He's parked up there tonight, and he got stuck two vehicle fires on the M1, unfortunately for him, so he was having a tricky day as well. But he came across this cracking little independent truck stop, recommended, came up on his Facebook pages. So it's called The Cabin Cafe Crawley. So if you're down in that part of the world, he says, snap, clean, food's banging, and the lass that runs it is very nice and pleasant. So there's a tip for you from Team T&D and the Trucking Driver podcast. So, Joe, it is not long until I'm going to be coming down to do some tanker training and then spend a week working with you doing some cover for people that are on holiday and such like, which I'm looking forward to. I actually spotted a Shuttleworth tanker the other day when I was going down the M6. I was like, ah, there's one. First time I'd like noted to spot one. I'm not sure what truck, demo-wise, I'll be able to bring along for that yet. Jarrett, I'm trying to work out, because we've got Volvo bringing out the 780 and Scania happen to have a 770 demo as well, and I would like to try and get them kind of together to do a special sort of feature in the magazine with the two most powerful trucks, but I'm not too sure I'd want to get one of them out and use it on the tankers. I think I'd probably rather go for something else. They might not thank me if I bring one of them with the fuel economy if it's brand new, right enough. But I get the job done quickly.
Well, yeah, that's in running full weight and everything, then yeah, it'll certainly make a dent in fuel economy. See if their figures are what they say they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll have to go and see what I can sort out for that. But I think the plan is, I reckon I'd probably come down like the week before. What do you reckon? Is it sort of like a couple of days?
Yeah, yeah, that's in most drivers that haven't done tanks before. Yeah, you usually sort of 2-3 days is enough to sort of get your head around how the tanks work and things like that.
Yeah, perfect. How would that, would I be like out in a lorry, like following somebody else? I'd be in the passenger seat and we'd be like double manning.
Usually sort of double man. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the time it tends to be sort of get the new lads actually driving and get them used to sort of how the truck handles with the tank as mm-hmm. well. Obviously got the live loads, it's sort of sloshing around and things like that. So yeah, what I do when I'm sort of taking new drivers out and things, and yeah, get them driving as much as we can. I'll just be sat in the passenger seat sort of offering sort of tips and tricks and bits of advice and things like that. And then, yeah, so when we get to the lorries and we're loading and unloading and washing and everything, then yeah, sort of talking through and explaining all that.
Good stuff. That sounds good. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. Now, moving on, we had quite a few news stories come in today. One of the main ones has been the saga of E.M. Rogers, who have been fined a substantial amount of money for having stowaways in the truck. This is a very controversial subject matter. Now, I'm going to be speaking to Ed Rogers separately, so there'll be another bit of the podcast to that. But just to put you in the loop, if you don't know, the company does a lot of vehicle movements in from Europe. And they've had some problems with things as well. They've had windows smashed in trucks with objects being thrown at them. It's been quite stressful for the guys. But they eventually, they were found with some stowaways in the truck, still on the French side. I don't know how they'd managed to get through the scanners and all that. And basically, the authorities have come down on them like a ton of bricks. And if you want something to put a shiver down your spine, the driver has been fined £36,000 for this. Now, how's the driver supposed to be able to afford a 36 grand fine? That could have you remortgaging your house. It could make you bankrupt. But I guess the thing you've got to ask is, are they doing as much as they can security-wise? They can say that trucks aren't very well secured, but there's been cases of these guys getting like still saws and cutting open the roof of brand new fridge trailers. It's organised crime, and they're extremely determined to be able to get into these vehicles. I mean, how would you, How would you feel about it going abroad and having that hanging over your head?
Yeah, it's one of them. There's you got enough stress and things to worry about on the roads at the best of times without, and especially when you're sort of doing Europe and you've got all the extra things of sort of ferry crossings and customs and all the rest of it to be sort of thinking about. And yeah, to then think that potentially you can do everything you can to keep him out. Yeah, like you're saying, it's organized crime. It's every time something, a new bit of security measures or safety kit for the truck and things like that comes in, they'll be straight away trying to work out how that they can get around it and all the rest of it. So yeah, the last thing you want to be doing is potentially sort of coming back from your week over the water and everything, and then yeah, you've done everything you can, you've sort of had your overnight as far away from the port as you can, so you're sort of doing a full day's run, not stopping anywhere or anything like that, and yeah, they find their way in. And yeah, like you're saying, a big, huge chunk of money like that, then there's not many drivers in the country that can sort of afford a hit like that. Like you're saying, you're remortgaging, you're sort of going through all like your house insurance details, see if you've got legal cover to be able to have any chance of sort of affording solicitors to fight it even.
Because if you've got any fraction, any sliver of money at all, of course you get nothing. In terms of support, but I've read a Daily Mail article, and you know, few people are fans of the Daily Mail, really. But I would have thought that the Daily Mail would have been sort of more supportive of like a British business. It's like flying the flag for British industry, making a success of it, operating successfully in Europe in this post-Brexit world, which I'm pretty sure the Daily Mail were very much in favour of Brexit. But the rhetoric in the Daily Mail article is really disappointing. It's a British Hollage Bosch, going into Sean Connery mode there, a British Hollage Bosch. A British Hollage boss has slammed Home Office officials for fining him £66,000 after he claims six migrants, and then it's got the speech marks, snuck into the back of one of his lorries to enter the UK. Ed Rogers, owner of EM Rogers Transport, says he is furious with UK Border Force after its officials found the migrants in the back of one of his company's lorries at the French border. The businessman said he and his driver were being punished for not being Border Force agents or security guards. And he did speak to GB News today. He's been getting out there. Fair play to Ed. He's been getting on the national news networks, of course. The mainstream press are very picky about what they want to report. You know, all the farmers' protests. I haven't been saying anything about that.
Yeah, that's well under the radar of mainstream media, isn't it, them protests?
Yeah, it's been enormous right across Europe. Huge protests against the EU and these cuts and everything that they're trying to do to the farmers. And the mainstream media is not reporting on it, and it's been enormous. They're very selective and what they show you, but the way that they try and control narratives like that doesn't really work anymore, because we have social media and we have news does get out. Rogers, this is another disappointing bit of this article that I don't like. The Hollier company had previously claimed another of its lorries was attacked by migrants in France who used iron bars and breeze blocks to smash its windscreen and door windows. And Rogers claimed his company, which has been operating for nearly 80 years, were actually the victims of organised gangs. And then it says the Mail Online understands the fine was in relation to a number of cases of negligence from its drivers, with a probe into the firm ongoing. So that would be interesting to find out what the facts are regards to that probe. But they do thousands of crossings. That's what you need to remember. They're back and forth constantly, all the time. So you only need to get caught out, you know, once. But Home Office figures show more than 3,000 people have crossed the English Channel in small boats so far this year. So they've got a bloody cheek taking Hollier's to task in this way. I think we should find the Home Office border agents every time a migrant goes and sneaks over on a boat. But the cracking thing here is they've got a picture of one of Rogers' Volvo FHs with the windscreen stoved in on it. And it says the Hollier company had previously claimed another of its lorries was attacked. What do you mean previously claimed? You see, that didn't happen.
Obvious, that one. There's no questioning what happened with that truck, is there? It's like the headboard smashed in. Windscreens caved in, and it doesn't take much research to find out what's happened, does it?
Yeah, I'd like to know how some of these authority guys would feel if somebody went through a brick at their window when they were going to work. The driver was shaking and upset. Yeah, I mean, you've seen the videos of them chucking stuff out in the road and the lorries running over the top of it, and they're really aggressive. And for a time there, it was terrifying. And to be honest, we don't actually know what the situation is around the ports of entry and places are trying to get in the trucks, because it's not being reported on at the moment, and it hasn't really been for a while. Perhaps trucking drivers should get its investigation hat on, or maybe a crash helmet, and go out, see if we can go out in someday and see what's actually going on there, if anybody thinks that's a good idea. It's really disappointing, the whole rhetoric of that Daily Mail article, because Ed Rogers said the lorry had been travelling from Italy through France to reach Britain and managed to get through the French security checks before being held up at the UK's scanners. Now, you've got to ask yourself the questions here then, what the hell were the French doing? And the whole point is that they managed to go and catch them at this point anyway, so therefore the systems and the checks ultimately worked. They didn't jump out the vehicle on the M3. But I say they're getting more and more determined to get into these vehicles, and they're coming up with more and more inventive ways to get into them. They're used, the strength of like battery operated power tools these days, like a DeWalt, like those Sawzalls, reciprocating saws and angle grinders, you can get through anything. You can break through hardened steel locks, you can cut holes in the roofs of things. And it's like, why should haulage companies be under such pressure to have to deal with all this stuff? They should be being supported in everything that they do, rather than being bashed over the head with that. That's just sickening to see a driver fined £36,000. So, just to round that off, Ed said, "This is the same border force that can't stop the boats we hear about arriving daily from across the channel. We are actually the victims of organised gangs that target vulnerable lorry drivers whilst they sleep. Can you imagine having your house broken into at night and then being fined for it?" And I think that kind of sums it up perfectly, really. So more on that shortly.
Yeah, it'd be interesting after you chat with Ed, but yeah, it just doesn't make any sense, does it, that you've done what you can to keep them out, and the border force have picked them up still in the port area, so they haven't got onto the boat, they haven't got into the UK. Their checks have picked it up, yet you're the one that still gets fined for it.
Yeah, it's not fair. It just shows you the kind of disdain and the lack of, the ultimate sort of lack of appreciation for road transport and what truck drivers do. If we stop trucks coming across that channel, and people soon didn't have all the things that they've got very used to from Europe, all your fruits and your vegetables and your wine and all these sort of things, you'd soon see a kick off once it started to be affecting all these well-to-do classes. So yeah, just one of these, an infuriating aspect of road transport. So let's move on to some other news stories. We've got a few for you. Digital screens in cars. Now, this is a press release that's come out which says that buttonless car controls are causing huge issues with driver distraction. Now, I don't know about you, Joe, and everybody listening, but I've definitely seen a big increase in people distracted driving in the past few years. It's definitely getting worse. And of course, what do they tell you? You cannot have your phone in your hand at all. 6 points for that. Bad news. Say, don't touch your phone, don't use it at all. And then what do they do with the cars?
Yeah, but a whacking great big TV screen in the middle of it.
it's ridiculous, the size of these screens, and they're in everything now. They're in like just normal super minis, and a lot of them have got important controls buried within like digital menus. You can't have demister functions and all that buried within these screens. People, you need to have buttons and a certain amount of simplicity.
I know even cars and things like that, like Teslas, they don't really have any buttons other than what's on your indicator stalks. Everything else is on the whacking great big TV screen in the middle of the center dash. So yeah, that screen, it's one system that does everything from your navigation, your radio, DAB, CDs and all the rest of it, right through to demisters, turning lights on for the car and everything. It's that thing that if you got your sat nav set up and then you want to put your demisters on for your windscreen and things, then you've got to come out of that menu, go into your sort of car settings, scroll down to demisters, then effectively use your finger to change the dials and things like that to put the blowers on, temperatures. It's
far too complicated for most people. Loads of people don't know how to use the cruise control in their cars. They've got it on the steering wheel, on a stalk or whatever like that, and they don't know how to use it, never use it. So things are becoming far too overcomplicated in that respect. And there's definitely so much more distracted driving. And you can see it with the accidents like you see every day on the road now. You know, it's more than likely how close do people drive to each other. And combining that with not checking your blind spot, not watching what you're doing, you see it like every day. Do you ever drive trucks with adaptive cruise control?
Yeah, we've got a couple that haven't fitted, and because I'm not driving it all the time, it can take a bit of getting used to that. All of a sudden, you sort of realise you've lost those couple of miles an hour that it's,
yeah,
because it knocked it off so slowly. You suddenly try to work out why this truck that you're sort of gaining quite quickly, all of a sudden it's you're not gaining on it anymore. And yeah, they take a bit of getting used to if you're not in it every day.
Yeah, it took me a while to get used to it, but because I'm quite fortunate in that pretty much everything I drive these days is a press demonstrator, they tend to all have it. And I've found that I got kind of very used to it. There was one truck I drove recently and it didn't have it. And I was like tanking up behind somebody and I was thinking, it's going to go and pass. Oh, wait, then I know it's not. This is going to just keep going. But what you find with adaptive cruise control is that it does leave a perfect set gap at all times. And of course, when you're in busy traffic, cars will just continually pull into that gap all the time. And then the truck's slowing down, pulling out, slowing down. And eventually you just get fed up and you end up kind of pulling the gap up and sitting like feathering the throttle to stop people doing it all the time because they need to get in front of the lorry. But I don't know what the solution would be in terms of these digital screens, because it's all coming in with this sort of fashion, and even if they're going to start winding it back, it's going to get worse before it gets better. And then they start like saying, okay, well, we're going to fit three dials in the middle of the dash to operate your fan controls, so people know what it is that they're doing. But if that screen goes black, if it goes out, then you've lost all functionality to your car or whatever as well. So it's a stupid idea.
Having a bit of read upon that sort of this afternoon, I saw that NCAP, sort of the Euro crash test people, from I think it's 2026.
That's right, yeah.
They were saying that certain key functions have to be back to sort of buttons and dials and things. They can't be on a screen. Otherwise, you won't get a 5-star safety rating. It's like, well, to be fair, how many people choose what car they buy based on sort of the crash testing thing? There will be some people, but most will sort of go into a dealer, and especially sort of PCP deals and things like that. They'll say, I like the look of that car. How much will it cost for your monthly payments and things like that? There's not many people where sort of the crash test star rating actually factors into what car they choose. So I know it's sort of their way of getting everything back to being sort of physical buttons and things like that, but I wonder how many manufacturers will actually listen to it or just sort of take the hit of not getting that top star rating.
Yeah, well, it seems to be going the other way at the moment, where more and more stuff's getting digitised, and it's happening with trucks as well. Like, everybody's moving to have a digital dash rather than a set of dials. And across all the manufacturers, I've heard the cases of the screen just going black. and then you don't have anything off it. Guy driving back to Germany using his phone so he can know what speed he's going, because the truck's running fine, but the screen's blacked out and it needs a software update or something. They don't know what's going on with it.
And yeah, I had that on the DAF actually. Earlier on in the summer, I did XG Plus on demonstrator, and I ran it for a week, and then one of the other drivers ran it for a week. And on my second day of having it, brand new demonstrator, less than 800 kilometers on clock. And then, I went to do a trailer swap up at Penrith. And then when I was just leaving Penrith, dashboard went completely black. So I had no speed. I was no anything. sort of spinning around at the roundabout on the motorway junction, and took it up to Solway DAF, and they did we'll unplug the battery for a minute, put it back on, see if that fixes it. If not, we'll have to plug computer in and see what it says. And taking positive terminal off battery for a minute or two did cure it, but obviously every time the board comes out, you can't be getting 30mm spanner out and taking the terminal off.
Yeah, that happened to me with the Iveco S-Way last year. It started throwing all sorts of faults up. I lost the cruise control, all the functionality on one side of the steering wheel, and then other stuff started going weird. So I just pulled into a lay-by in the A9, took the battery terminal off it for a minute, and then it fixed it. The funny thing was that when you do that with certain trucks, it will then flag up to the control center that something's happened to that truck. And whatever had happened to the Iveco, it sent a distress signal out to Iveco saying that this truck's broken down. And they did call me and contact me to ask if I was broken down 24 hours later. just checking in. Are you broken down? I was like, no, I sort of was, but I just fixed it. I took the battery off and all, and put it on. A lot of people wouldn't think to do that, but it's well worth considering. Don't take that as advice. Don't, if you go and do it and then something happens, but if you I didn't tell you to do it, but taking the battery terminal off and just switching it off and on again seems to help some of the time with these things. But technology, it's like,
it's almost that old thing with IT support, wasn't it? Or if your computer's not working, turn it off, turn it back on again. You can imagine sort of ringing DAF Aid or something like that nowadays, couldn't you? And describing the fault and they're saying, oh, well, before we send a technician to it, take the battery terminal off, give it 5 minutes, put it back on again, and if it's still got an issue, give us a ring back. And
but you always hear the truck manufacturers talking about total connectivity, and the truck knows there's going to be something going wrong with it before it does, and the truck will tell the supercomputer and it will get the truck booked in, and it'll all just, like, the information will come through to the operator and through to the driver, and it'll all be completely seamless. But I think it really works like that, because what will happen is the sensor that's supposed to tell you that the sensors have failed will fail, and then you won't be able to do anything about it. But so that's been coming up. That was one story in the press that came out today, is you can't get a 5-star Euro NCAP rating after 2026 if you've got too much digital stuff. You're listening to the Truck and Driver podcast, brought to you by TomTom. The TomTom Go navigation offers a specific set of truck features. You can set your cargo and truck dimensions for specific routes so you can drive confidently on suitable roads, making every journey efficient and reliable. Truck, yeah. I've got an interesting one. MAN sent a press release out. They're accelerating the development of driverless trucks.
I'll see it before we believe it. I'm not convinced on them.
Yeah, well, MAN Truck and Bus continues to drive forward the development of driverless transport between logistics hubs. So you're talking, I think, in collaboration with a US automated driving specialist. So they want to drive, it's basically, they want driverless trucks to drive between one hub and another one, ideally. And that's just not going to work in so many ways in the UK. But it said in the press release that it was it had alleviate the increasing shortage of drivers and make transport processes even more efficient and environmentally friendly. So it was kind of a press release, like something about nothing. But I thought that was interesting. The increasing shortage of drivers. What planet are they on? To tell you right now, we know for a fact there is not a driver shortage anymore. In fact, we've got poor drivers being made redundant left, right and centre, with companies going out of business every week. Dutch A Plant was another one that went down this week. And we had Hayden, was it Hayden Chilled that have apparently...
Hayden Chilled, yeah, there's nothing official, but yeah, there's sort of a couple of bits on Facebook, sort of drivers putting photos on saying they're sort of out of work and now looking and things like that. So yeah, it's...
Yeah, driver shortage. But just being into it, you imagine on your average sort of night trunk operation going to the hub with a double-decker trailer full of pallets that this thing has got to go and get from wherever it goes to get to the hub. And they want that to be done driverlessly. And it's got to go and navigate its way out of the rush hour traffic, get in the motorway. The motorway is probably closed. And then when it gets to the hub, it's got to go and queue up. Somebody's got to be there to open the curtains on it. Somebody's got to be there to take the straps off the stuff. If nobody's actually driving the truck, are people going to be that careful about strapping what's on it? What if something tips and goes all over the place inside the trailer? Who's going to be responsible for that? But I was kind of thinking as well, did you see the guy that got robbed on the A14, the trailer curtain slashed open?
No, I didn't see that one.
No, that was one that was on Twitter. Phil from JR Dixon had posted it. And yeah, it was the usual thing. Guy was parked at a Shell petrol station, curtain slashed, stuff ripped out it, no security. You know, we don't get any security in so many different places. And again, they talk about electrification, and of course we don't have enough safe truck parking in the country. We don't have capacity. So how on earth are you going to try and start widespread electrification and the charging network that you require when you don't have enough parking spaces or secure parking? But I was thinking, well, a driverless truck, you imagine the driverless truck's going up the road, there's nobody in it. So that means that criminals could, in theory, make that truck stop at any given point. Because if you go and drive in front of it and slow down, is it going to drive it? What's it going to do? Is it going to drive out around you? It's just going to sit there. And you could literally get somebody to go and climb in the back of the trailer and go through everything that they wanted and then go and stop. There'd be nothing left in the bloody thing by the time it gets to these hubs. Wouldn't it? Yeah. People would just start, there's nobody in the thing, and away it goes up the road. It's quite a labouring...
Yeah, especially when you're thinking of the operators that can do that type of thing, the hub-to-hubs and things like that, they're going to be like the massive big carriers. It's all going to be XPOs and Yamazons and things like that, isn't it? It's from a massive distribution centre right onto the motorway network, a couple hundred miles later, first roundabout, straight onto another distribution centre and into the depot again. It's going to be big operators like that, isn't it? And they're the ones that will have trailers full of high-value stuff that's easy to rob, isn't it? So,
yeah, you would think so. You know, if these illegals can go and get their way into trailers and things, you know, the guys jumping off the top of motorway bridges like Spider-Man, cutting holes in the roofs of things. I thought, yeah, driver, like night trunking and a lot of what guys do in amongst network hubs at night, it's quite a labour-intensive operation to get stuff up the road and get it back on time. You can't afford to be mucking about you need guys who are like motivated to get things done and guys who've got the skill to navigate round incidents when they occur, like problems on the road network. Experienced night trunk drivers can really make a difference between stuff getting back on time and it not, due to like accumulated knowledge that's taken years. And you're not going to get that with just some simple, some extremely complicated, but some computer system that's going to manage to go and do that. So, yeah, global commercialization of driverless trucks. Yeah, right. believe that when we see it. So next story, I don't know if I shared this one with you, but M25 strike chaos potentially on the horizon.
No, I didn't see that one. I know they're planning on doing, is it in a weekend closure on the M25, isn't it, coming up soon for Junction 11? Yeah, they're putting the overbridge in, so yeah, the M25, one junction is going to be shut for a whole weekend.
Well, anybody that's going near there needs to be really, really careful because of DVS, which I'll lead on into in a minute, because they've done it before when there's been like an accident in the M25 and they've diverted everybody off the motorway into like the ULEZ sort of DVS area and find the hell out of everybody that's gone into it when they're like, well, we didn't have a choice. We didn't want to be in this road. Comes under, you couldn't make it up, but yeah, you easily could. M25 strike chaos. Balfour Beatty, about 150 M25 maintenance workers employed by Balfour Beatty have voted for strike action today. The workers provide vital maintenance for the entire M25. So they're the guys that go and put all the cones out at night and then take all the cones back in again. Not a job I fancy, being a coner or a coneman. See, when they're chucking them out onto the road and everything like that. Certain amount of nerves of steel to be doing that, especially with distracted drivers these days. I bet they've got some stories to tell. In fact, that'd be quite interesting to go and speak to one of those guys.
Yeah, I'll be up to it anyway. I think first cone I'll chuck out, it'll end up tipping over and running under a truck that's in middle lane. So.
You do see some crazy stuff when they're putting the road down from four lanes to one with the cones, and you're moving across to the outside lane in the truck, and somebody in a car who is, as usual, watching no further than the end of his bonnet, is infuriated as to why this truck has moved into the fourth lane. And then he comes steaming down the inside of everybody and realises he's got a whole load of cones. And then there's like a line of lorries. It's like, nope, sorry, mate. You've got good brakes. But people putting themselves in ridiculous danger like that. I had a really close one recently where a guy did that, came steaming in at the end, and to be honest, I could have put him into the cones, but I didn't. I let him in because, well, I'm a nice egg. Could have been somebody's daughter or somebody's little old granny. You just never know with these things. So it's, you know, good to be kind, even when somebody's doing something stupid. Balfour Beatty have announced that their revenues have increased 7% to 9.6 billion. With underlying profits rising 2% to 236 million quid, and they've offered Balfour Beatty employees 4.9% pay rise. They're angry at a mere pay offer of 3.4% because the rate of inflation at 4.9%, that is a real terms pay cut. So they're not happy at 3.4%. I think it was more than I got last year. I don't remember the last time I had a wage rise, actually. I should ask. So they're going to strike action. Inconvenience and delays caused by strike action to the M25 travellers sit squarely at the door of Balfour Beatty. It had every opportunity to put forward a reasonable offer, but has repeatedly refused to do so. Balfour Beatty must swiftly return to talks with Unite, the union, and table an acceptable deal. Yeah, so Balfour Beatty have made an absolute shit ton of money, as with all these companies, and they don't want to really stump up wage rises. So now they're getting into it with Unite, the union, which means there's going to be chaos on the M25. How about if they all went on strike? That means they wouldn't be there to close the bloody motorway and put it down to one lane, so therefore things should run more smoothly, should it not?
Yeah, as long as you go on strike before they decide to own everything off or anything, then don't own it off and then go on strike. But it won't cause chaos, should it?
Yeah. Now, probably last story, main story, was one that came out today. Brett's Transport are getting ready for DVS because there's a big change coming for DVS 28th of October this year. That's London Direct Vision Standard. And it's moving from over 12 tonnes. It's moving from, you move from one star, is it, to three stars?
Yep.
Which means that your vehicles, if they're currently rated 0, 1, or 2 stars, you're required to have a progressive safe system fitted. Now you had a look into that with the prices, didn't you?
Yeah, so To go from their current minimum standard up to the sort of new one that's coming in October, you need to have a sort of forward-facing, basically radar scanner and a side scan as well, fitted to your truck. And parts alone, it's about 950 quid was the cheapest system that I could find. So then by the time you're actually getting it into a workshop, getting a technician to fit it and all the rest of it, then yeah, it's going to be sort of the wrong side of £1,000 per truck to get this system fitted. And that's just an upgrade from the current minimum standard to the new standard. If you've got a truck that's, you've just started picking up a London contract or something like that, so you've got no current direct vision system fitted, then yeah, it's going to be a stupid amount of money to fit the whole system now.
Yeah, people need to be quite wary of that. If you're familiar with London, then companies will generally, I would imagine, be quite on top of all this stuff. But like you say, if it's something that you're not familiar with these changes happening again, you could potentially be caught out with this. So 28th of October, it's not that far away. Of course, it's just more expense, but Brett's have the latest DVS compliant technology supplied by Fleet Focus fitted to 50% of its fleet over the next 7 months. So more regulations to be mindful of, but Brett's are investing £25,000 into both the installation as well as the cost of the DVS systems. So it's not cheap, with a reported 180,000 vehicles requiring progressive safe system upgrades come the 28th of October deadline. Graham Plummer, Commercial Director of Fleet Focus, highlighted that hauliers which operate vehicles within Greater London should follow Brett's example by implementing a calculated and considered DVS plan.
Don't leave it till September before ringing you.
No, well, that's the thing, because if you won't get any of the installers either, because they're all going to be booked up being busy with things throughout all of that. So, yeah, that's on the horizon as well. And, of course, we've got the main driver CPC deadlines this year as well for a lot of guys in the sort of five-year cycle. So there's that to consider as well. Oh, fun. This has been a...
Just never-ending doom and gloom today, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, the thing about haulage is it keeps on going no matter what in the face of constant adversity. With the costs of things are just off the charts. I've visited a couple of companies in the last couple of weeks, and like costs are just like off the scale. I've been to see a couple of guys who have their own garages. They're sort of well organized commercially, and they're able to, like, much like Shuttleworth, go and get vehicles which have potentially got some issues, and they're able to rebuild them.
Yeah.
And if you've got the ability to, like, Euro 6 is a minefield. With the issues that a Euro 5 truck is a clean modern vehicle, but it's also a lot simpler than a Euro 6. And you can pick up trucks kind of cheaper now, but you can easily get a £20,000 bill for putting a Euro 6 right once you've mucked about with the exhaust and stuff. It's not just like a few years ago where you could just have something, you could have your old Scania 124 or 164, or even going back at your Cummins powered Brits, it would just plod on forever. You've got to be more mindful of the complexity of things. I wonder where we will be with things in sort of 10 years' time with that, as they're trying to push some sort of alternative deadline. Who knows?
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Even those that don't go electric, whether you sort of CNGs and hydrogen and things like that, then obviously they're sort of complicated systems that no one's sort of been running for any length of time as well. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see the lifespan on them as well. Will they sort of last as long as the diesels, or will they start having issues after sort of 4 or 5 years? And
yeah, well, I did get another news story in where a German company had taken on another 40 LNG trucks to support their fleet. because LNG is, the gas is successful, and the gas that they're using is full biogas, so it's made from like waste products, so it's clean, renewable, sustainable, it's better than diesel, it's better than electric. And of course, gas has absolutely no support from the government in the UK at all. And that could be such a good solution for those who are obsessed by air quality. But that's not, it's not really on the agenda. Actually, I've got an article in the magazine coming out this week as well about HVO, hydro-treated vegetable oil diesel, which can be made fully from waste products. Because when I was at Stolthaven Dagenham, we photographed one of Brian Easy's tankers there, a lovely Scania 500R, beautiful thing. So that's in the next issue. But HVO is more expensive than normal diesel, even though it's cleaner and it's more sustainable. And the government's not helping with to get people onto that. It's just they don't seem to care. They just see money. They're just like, yeah, we'll just keep milking that resource. But anyway, just
almost like they're not bothered about it, isn't it? That they sort of say they want people to move over to alternative fuels, but the incentives aren't there. So the way that the economy is at the moment, then no one can afford to spend, other than the big fleets and things, and no one can sort of afford to, can they? They can't afford to invest on sort of new trucks and alternative fuels. You just sort of stick with diesel.
Yeah, no, it's impossible with the price increases. Things going up the way that they are. It will be interesting to see what happens as we move forward with all of that. But just to round things off, where are you? What's your plans for this, the next 3 days of your shift, Steve? And I know you're going to be like back home tomorrow, you reckon?
Yeah, so back home tomorrow. So I'll just have 9 hours off tonight. So I'll be back on the road by 3 o'clock in the morning. Then we're running down to Market Drayton. So we've got a yard at Congleton that we sort of share with sort of a couple of other sort of hauliers. So we use that as sort of a tank drop off. So into Congleton, do a tank change to swap tanks. And then, yeah, we're down into Market Drayton to load some cream that's going over to Ireland. So I'll be sort of loading it, sitting to wait for the vet to do all their sort of export paperwork and things like that they need to do to keep customs happy. Then we'll be running that trailer up to Heysham docks, dropping it at Heysham, and then yeah, I'll be home tomorrow night. And then as for the rest of the week, I won't know until I get me sort of message through from the planners sort of 3-4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon for the day after. But yeah, that's tomorrow at least. So
Well, hopefully the dominoes will fall the right way for you tomorrow.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, you just never know with transport. Well, sometimes you can get ahead and everything, it's like hitting green light after green light. You're just like, yes, everything's going well. But to truly appreciate days when things go right like that, you have to also experience the ones where they don't go right, so you've got some context for things. But we'll wrap this one up now. Thank you very much for coming on and joining us again on the podcast, Joe. And thanks, everyone, for continuing to listen and your support. Remember, please do go and click on the TomTom link, because in addition to that, I forgot to mention, we've got a competition running as well where you can win some very nifty TomTom merchandise as well. So thanks again, and I will catch up with you guys all again soon. Take care. Cheers.
Cheers. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to the Truck and Driver podcast, proudly sponsored by TomTom. As a special thanks to our listeners for trucking through the holiday season, we're giving away 1 month free of TomTom Go Navigation Truck. Simply download the Go Navigation app and use the code TRUCKYEAH. That's TRUCKYEAH when subscribing. Safe travels, folks.